29 minutes to 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, and the afternoon show is a go, brought to you proudly by Bidness McCarthy Toyota Bolito. Time now for another episode of Uncensored with Penny Faree.
Good afternoon to all our listeners, and a very warm welcome to our special guest today, Dion Viljoen, the chairman of the Dolphin Coast Residents and Ratepayers Association, otherwise known as DOCRA. It's good to have you with us on the show, Dion.
Thanks, Penny. Good afternoon. Hi, Dave. Hello. Hi to all your listeners.
Lovely to have both of you back here.
So while South Africa faces national challenges, such as those with Eskom and the collapse of our state-owned enterprises, our local community, represented by DOCRA, has a strong voice. We all recognize the importance of this voice in holding local government accountable and ensuring that our hard-earned money is used wisely. Now, the Dolphin Coast is undergoing unprecedented development and growth. Over the past decade, residents' primary concerns have shifted from crime to service delivery, and ratepayers need a bigger say in how their money is spent, ensuring that local government is accountable for its actions. Now, Dion, given these critical issues facing our community at the moment, how is DOCRA currently advocating for greater accountability and effective service delivery within Kwadukuza Municipality?
Yo, Penny.
Just drive right into it.
not only that, that's a very big question.
Yeah.
Maybe also just to mention that we've got our AGM tomorrow night.
Yes, we will definitely be touching on
that. We've got our community conversation, so these kind of topics will be coming up there as well. But DOCRA is recognized as the official stakeholder for civil society within the municipality. Every possible forum that we can interact with, we interact with, and some extras. So we've organized our own separate meetings with them. We use external sources, whether that's the Auditor General, whether that's OUTA, SIU, Hawks, whatever. So it's not just DOCRA. But I think the important thing is that the Dolphin Coast is blessed with a plethora of civil society initiatives and organizations. And we are hoping to bring all of them together, to stand together, to challenge the things that we are worried about at the municipality.
And then those things we're going to be having a conversation with possibly tomorrow night at the AGM.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think the four main things that we're looking at here is at the moment the dysfunctional council.
Yeah, that's
so
a big
the council's concern. Not happening. Meetings are being cancelled and so on, and that's post-election stuff, and also infighting amongst the biggest political party around. So, what worries us is that the administrators are doing what they want because there's very little oversight, or meetings are not happening. That's the first one. The next one is performance management. Once you've got performance management, you can do consequence management. And the last one is obviously corporate governance. Yeah. And there we're focusing on those four pillars.
Can I just also point out to a key issue currently affecting the community? In recent months, there's been disturbing reports that surfaced across social media and WhatsApp groups regarding taxi operators in our town intimidating commuters who opt for private transport. Now, there's been multiple accounts describing minibus taxi operators obstructing e-hailing services, carpooling, lift clubs, and even private motorists offering rides to colleagues and friends. And they even set up illegal roadblocks in the mornings and afternoons, and those have been used to stop vehicles and they remove passengers citing threats to their business. And the South African National Taxi Council has unequivocally stated that any paid transport, including lift clubs, operate illegally without proper permits. So our community has fallen prey to what many describe as a taxi mafia operating in our region. And do taxi associations possess the authority to conduct roadside checks and enforce legality on other vehicles? And reports indicate that some operators have been seen brandishing high-caliber firearms despite clear legal restrictions against displaying firearms in public. And the victims are obviously very hesitant to file criminal charges, citing fear of reprisal, which is understandable. I mean, you're looking at assault, intimidation, theft, firearm brandishing. Now, the situation begs the question, is there a genuine political will to address this issue at a legislative level? And compounding the concerns, it's widely known that a number of government officials have ties to the taxi industry. Now, how can public trust officials to resolve these issues when they are perceived to be part of the problem? And do we as a community have recourse, or is this another captured industry we must just be content with?
No, not at all, Penny. And yes, it is happening. So there is definitely intimidation.
Yeah.
And I know that the Joint Operations Committee, which I'm privileged to be part of, it's a confidential communication channel amongst the security leaders, are very aware and they are addressing it.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult because it happens sporadically. It happens at different times, different places. So you've really got to negotiate with the leaders of the taxi association. I believe that is taking place, and I hope to get more report on that.
Yeah.
But it's unacceptable, and it won't last. It will be stopped.
And when this happens, does the public actually file a report? I mean, they don't want to go to the police station because
they have to go to the fear of intimidation. No, they have to go to the police station.
There's been reports that some police officers are even involved
in the industry. You still go to the police station. You still go and make a charge. You can't not make a charge. Yeah. You have to charge.
Is there no anonymous line that they could possibly, put an email or complain through?
Certainly not at KDM. No, there's no anonymous line there.
I mean, the taxi industry, there's so much guns for hire going on at the moment. And just a businessman that spoke to me just recently said that he pays, part of their package is to get transport their workers. And he has been stopped numerous times. The workers have all been, taken out and forced onto taxis, and he actually feared for his life at one stage. And this happens. This is just one of many stories. So I feel, everyone's been talking about it, but I haven't seen any action from any of KDM officials or the departments or even from the provincial side that this is a problem that they're willing to tackle.
Well, I don't know. I'm not there at that time of the morning to see it happen and to see what officials are there. But I do know that it is something that is being addressed and it will be resolved.
Yeah. And the other question was at our recent Ward 22 public meeting, our ward councillor, Privy McCann, she announced that Kodikuzi Municipality has allocated 3 million rand to the 30 wards for fixing potholes and the lights in the new financial year. And however, concerns have been raised about the municipality's capital budget and underspending, which stood at 42% by the end of March, as highlighted in a recent audit report. Now, this chronic underperformance is a recurring issue for KDM. Now, what are your thoughts of this underspending? If they're only allocating 3 million rand to all 30 wards, surely they should, ratepayers are expecting their hard-earned money to be invested in critical infrastructure like roads and streetlights.
So let's take, two things. The one is underspending. So there's an underspending of the operational budget, and there's an underspending of the capital budget every year. So we've been addressing that. It's been improving.
Yeah.
But we've been addressing that from day one. I just want to emphasize that the money that's underspent does not get sent back anywhere. It lands up in the reserve account of the municipality, which is audited and checked, and we know the money is there.
So they're not spending it.
So it's not spending it, so it is kept and it can roll over. So in the case of Privy, some of that money that she got was rolled over from underspending of the previous years.
But is it not the case that if money is underspent, if budgets are underspent, there is a very strong chance of national government reducing the allowance to local municipalities, regional municipalities? In fact, I've heard of many instances where municipalities that have not spent their allocation have had the next year's allocation reduced substantially.
But we must keep grant money separate.
Mm.
So grant money comes from national government or provincial government, and that would typically be for roads or for housing and so on. So yes, grant money, like the flood relief money that we got, if that is not spent, that gets returned.
Okay.
But municipalities are financially independent. So in our case, our municipality, 85-90% of the money that we pay into the municipality is generated by the municipality.
So is there no support from national government for municipalities?
No, there is indigent support. So that's for the people that obviously earn under a certain limit. And then there are many grants that you can apply for, as I said, notably in human settlements and in roads.
Hmm. But serious infrastructural budgeting, surely that there's a tranche that comes from national government.
Yeah, but then that would be under their spending. So SONROL, for example, if they're going to do something, then SONROL will manage that.
Okay. So
they will consult with the municipality.
So we're not
say
in danger of having our budgets reduced by national cover.
Whatever. But the point is, though, don't budget to spend 100 rand, collect 100 rand, and then only spend 80. We want the services. We want the potholes fixed. So we keep on pushing. Yes, the money is secured. It's lying in the reserve. But that's not where it's supposed to lie. It's
but
supposed
hasn't
to
the
be,
reserve also been substantially reduced of late? One hears that there was a three-month reserve, which has been reduced substantially since the chief financial officer was on, shall we call it, paid suspension?
We'll know the true facts of that fairly shortly. The financial year is finished at the end of June, and Shamir is back. So he's scratching and he's looking for whatever, you know, obviously for the financial year end to see what's happened. I don't think it is as bad as the rumors have said. The coverage is only a percentage of the reserve. So the municipality needs to keep 3 months reserve as to be a going concern. Mm-hmm. And that's about 200 million a month. So that's about 600 million. And there was a billion rand there. So the rest are provisions for pension, leave, all kinds of other stuff. So
we're not too bad at this point in time.
We're not too bad at this
point
in time.
The lights are staying on for the foreseeable future.
I'll tell you where we do need to be concerned is the flood monies that have not all been spent. I mean, our municipalities had to step up their game tremendously because normally they spend about 200 million of capital expenditure a year. Suddenly they get 1.4 billion to spend, so they had to increase capacity. Of that, there's about 300 million that won't or was not spent at the end of June. However, tenders have gone out and those projects have started. And as long as you can prove that to national government, they will allow you the rollover of that 300 million.
Good. Do you think there's an oversight from Treasury on these on this 1.4 or 1.9, as a lot of people are saying?
A more critical oversight on that than on our own procurement department and allocation of contracts. I wish we had that kind of oversight on our own allocation of budgets.
Okay. Well, you know, that big sinkhole just by Sharker's Head, this is a shout out to the ANC ward councillor, Jethro Bunder. I've tried numerous times to just get an update on it. Do you think
the sinkhole, you're talking about the new substation?
No, across the substation. No, that's another
because that's supposed to be a substation. That looks like a sinkhole.
Dave, smart.
Yeah, just sneaking that in. But, I mean, that's very dangerous. There's been near calls there of pile-ups because it's almost a blind spot. So the traffic coming off the R102, turning in there, is greeted with this big pothole, sinkhole, and then they have to actually swerve into the other lane where trucks are also coming down there, taxis at speed. So
no, it is tight. And there are two lanes on the other side, and it is very well guarded, if you wish. Yeah. So you can see it.
Did that fall under the disaster management fund?
I don't think that falls under, and that happened after that. So I think a special application has to be put in for that.
Okay.
And as soon as the council starts meeting again, we'll certainly be addressing that.
Maybe the councillor could possibly give us an update on it.
Good luck getting hold of it.
Yeah, Mr. Bunder, if you're out there listening to the show, please contact me.
As I understand it, he hasn't been able to attend to his ward because of security threats.
Yes, he's got two bodyguards that guard him.
Yeah.
The ratepayers assure him that he's very well protected.
He does move around more freely now.
Yeah, okay. I did apparently see him canvassing during the local government. I mean, the national.
He's not the most popular kid on the block in that region, which is interesting how he got elected in the first place. But that's for another occasion.
Remember, he doesn't get elected; gets allocated.
Well,
so if they had to vote for him, it's even more questionable.
Yeah. But you know, the last financial year ending 2022-23, 262 million rand in electricity losses were recorded by KDM. That's quite a... So despite opposition parties and DOCRA voicing their concerns for the past few years, little has changed. Now, these deepening losses by the electricity department are the single greatest risk to Kwadukuza's ability to function as a financially sound municipality. For now, however, the cost is borne by the ratepayers, who were hard hit with a 10.5% electricity hike this new financial year. And for those who do not know, 52% of KDM's main revenue stream comes from electricity tariffs, followed by property rates at 27%. How's KDM going to get on top of those losses, or will they continue to rely on squeezing the already burdened ratepayer base?
I can answer that.
Yes.
So we've been on that issue for quite a while, a number of years already. Vutela, which is a consulting firm that's been sponsored internationally funding, has been collaborating with the municipality, and they have developed a 17-point plan, 17 different initiatives that get implemented to curb electricity losses. 9 of them have started.
When did they start?
At our last meeting in March, when we got a feedback from the municipality, 9 of them had started. We'd also started requesting performance on each of those 9, and Jolly could give us on 3 of those 9, he could give us actual figures of performance and successes of curbing that. Now, you talk about the increase this year of 10%. Remember that the NERSA's recommendation was 12.9%. So our municipality is actually subsidizing the increase that we got from NERSA. We as DOCRA are concerned because they are banking that they're going to save a serious amount of these illegal connections and non-collection in order to subsidize whatever this shortfall they are going to have between 12 and 10%. But at least it shows that they are committed to try and do that. We hope that they're going to achieve the electricity savings that they've indicated and budgeted for.
You know, I'm not hopeful because I've been to so many meetings where the executive director of the department, Mr. Jolly, he has spoken to the community at various award meetings and community meetings, and he has sounded so confident, but this is a consistent failure. Every year we straddled with the same numbers, and it's not a small amount, it's crazy. So are those illegal connections more from the migrant workers that have descended on the area, that have set up illegal
Penny, I think we must understand that it's not just illegal connections. Yeah. Illegal connections is probably 20 or 30% of that.
Oh, really?
It is non-collection and theft.
And meter tampering.
And meter tampering. Yeah. So business is involved, private sector is involved, domestic individuals are involved. So it goes wider than just illegal connections.
I have an idea that they're beginning to get on top of these things because, for example, I live in Stella Road in Bolito.
Yeah.
And there's been one of those electrical connection boxes that has been tampered with, and it's been standing open for an awfully long time, and one just accepts that that's the way it is. It was replaced the other day. Of course, most of the people in the street were most upset that they didn't get advance warning, including myself. It was on Sunday. Suddenly, no power.
You had no power.
But a brand new box installed efficiently, effectively, and things are happening.
New metering systems.
It's definitely showing signs of life.
It is slow. The first thing is we've got to stop the increase of these electricity losses because every year they increase by 2 or 3%. If we can just get, let's just get to level playing field. And then if we can start clawing back, you'll never claw back the full percentage. At the moment it's 26%. The accepted national average is around about 12 because there's electricity losses because of heat and all kinds of other engineering stuff. So, 14% over and above the 12 is unacceptable. It's costing us a lot of money. Let's get that curbed and start working our way back.
Yeah. I know DOCRA does a lot of hard work behind the scenes. You've got a strong finance committee with a strong financial accounting skill base that closely monitors the deployment of public funds for public projects. I know DOCRA raised a hell of a lot of questions in a report to the AG. Do you want to quickly elaborate on this?
We've got a very good relationship with the Auditor General, and we have raised a number of issues with him, and those issues are all coming to the fore.
Can you give me an example of one? Just like
would meet taxi rank.
Okay.
Would meet taxi rank. But the way the Auditor General works is he would investigate something and highlight it.
Okay.
Then he gets then the next year he comes back and he says, okay, I've highlighted this. What have you done about it? Then they say, we've done nothing about it, or we're trying to do this about it. Then they get a final warning. Then it's another year. So only by year three has the Auditor General got the muscle to implement stuff. So one's got to understand the lead times that are involved.
So there's no accountability immediately.
No accountability is just a sweeping statement. Yes, there is.
So do they just rubber stamp it, perhaps? Like,
Who does?
Auditor General, he says, okay, you guys did this, you erred on this, you haven't done it. Doof, I've acknowledged it, there's my report. let's monitor it for next year. That's how it looks like it's from the outside. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, I think one must, you know, go and scratch and get more information. Yeah. It may look like that, but it's not like that.
You know, I want to just say one thing. As far as the work of DOCRA particularly is concerned, it's very, very easy for those that are not in the picture to point fingers and say, firstly, I've got to understand that these are all people, many of them professionals, that give of their own time, that put in a huge amount of work, just simply because they care. They are unpaid, they are in many instances unrewarded and unrecognized, and yet they do a fabulous job
under the
most difficult circumstances. Time is the most valuable with your family, and they do this, and we are extremely fortunate. I think it's a fair question to ask, because I'm sure many people that don't know say, well, why should we support this initiative? And it's good, I think, to have the opportunity like this for questions to be raised and answers to be given.
Yes.
And generally speaking, awareness to be created of the function of this incredibly important statutory, which means recognized legally by local government and any other agency that you choose to mention, link between the community and those that are empowered to use your money as they see fit. And if it wasn't for DOCRA, we would be in serious difficulty.
And it's a strong voice. We are so lucky.
As strong as the support that it's given from the community that it serves. And I think everyone should be mandatory. Should be connected to DOCRA. Yeah.
To the two of you, thank you. Thank you very much for all of that. Yeah. And maybe just to lead in, tomorrow night, our annual general meeting that we had to move to a bigger venue. So this we had Salt Rock Country Club tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. And
5 o'clock, you said.
Hey? 5 o'clock for starting registrations.
Okay.
But we virtually fully subscribed. Okay. We're looking for extra chairs at the moment. So if you haven't booked and you haven't RSVP'd, you're welcome to pitch up. We're putting in some extra chairs, but we can't go more than 200. We're looking forward to a good turnout.
Yeah, so
and the main event tomorrow night, the AGM is a sideshow because that's boring and, you know, it's normal formalities.
Yeah.
What it's really about is getting all the different organizations in this community together and to have some genuine civil society conversations.
Yeah.
So we are breaking afterwards. We've got some snacks and some drinks. And virtually every association, not virtually, everyone that we've invited, from the Dolphin Coast Conservancy to the Elembe Chamber, KDRF, ICAM, Tinley Manor,
Auto as well, you said. Hey?
Auto is coming down as well to come and speak.
Yeah.
So it is a group event, group coordination, and we're looking forward to grow that in the future as
well. And I also think it's an opportunity for residents to come together, see what DOCRA is actually doing. Because you know what, you can sit on the sidelines and you can, you know, bitch and moan, but these are, you know, this is an active civil society that's doing a lot for the community, and we need to be active citizens. I sometimes think we need to roll up our sleeves, get involved. It's about making yourself more aware, possibly educating yourself, register to vote and going out to vote and find out who your local police station commissioner is, who your councillor is, and any programs you can get involved in, set up a debit order to support your organization, and pick up your bloody trash.
Mm.
That to me is, people, just pick up your trash. Just be active citizens.
And there it is, yet again, another action-packed edition of Uncensored with Penny Faree. If you've only just tuned in and are wondering what was discussed, well, it'll be up as a podcast shortly on the afternoon show on our apps, so you can share that information and you can listen to your heart's content in your own time. A very warm thank you and good afternoon to our special guest, Penny Faree, and Chair of DOCRA, Dion Finn.
Yes.
Thank you.
See everyone tomorrow evening, 6 p.m. at the Salt Rock Country Club.